Fishers of Men by Kevin Lenihan.
An anonymous letter to a hiking magazine designated not fit for publication. Being attached to one's own skin is a privilege many take for granted. Strolling through life without the thought to appreciate that their existence could be grotesquely snatched from them at a moment's notice by a freak accident or by a thousand hungry, gnashing teeth. This is not an admonishment, but rather a lament that I now find myself eternally envious of those who can still live this way. Call me whatever you like. My name is irrelevant, as is the country of my birth. My life now is one filled with people and noise, something I once thought of as abhorrent. It was 20 years ago to the day of this writing that I, as a relative youth, allowed my misanthropic mindset to finally drive me from my urban home and take up residence in the most remote spot I could find. I quit my job, took my not insubstantial savings, a meager inheritance from a father I never knew, and what possessions I could fit in a rucksack, and purchased a small patch of land deep in a wooded area as far from civilization as I could find. I read as many books on survival and living in the wilds as I could, and set about building for myself a simple cabin 50 feet from the riverbank surrounded by trees. I put much thought into my new home's location, taking into account that there would be enough vegetation, animals to hunt — I, after many failed attempts, crafted my own bow and arrows for this very purpose — and that it would be as inconvenient as possible for passing ramblers or travellers to accidentally stumble across. Finally, when I was ready, I jumped in my car and drove to the forest, honestly intending never to return. The first few months were a little more difficult than I had previously assumed, due in part to my foolish assumption that I would be a natural hunter. To this day, I'm sure there are still many injured trees in that forest that bear the misplaced arrows of my many failed attempts at slaying deer. In order to save my own ego, I would often blame my catastrophic aim on the fact that each day when I would hunt, I would end up exhausted, having had to travel quite far from my residence before I would encounter any animal large enough to warrant eating. In hindsight, the reason for this is obvious to me, but back then I assumed they were just repelled by the oddity of my cabin and their habitat, or the noise of my daily routines. I would soon discover how very wrong I was. Still, despite these hardships, I found myself filled with a slow building joy, growing each day when I would awake to the sound of only the flowing of the river and the songs of distant birds. The echoes of car horns, police sirens, and people arguing in the streets becoming more and more blurred in my memory every day, like some unpleasant dream that fades from your mind the more you try to remember it, until all that is left is the remembrance of the misery or fear that it stirred in you when it was fresh. After some time, I found that even this faded remnant of memory could easily be quelled by the feeling of purpose that would fill me as I engaged in my daily routines. It was for this reason that chopping wood for my fire quickly became the high point of my day. There were times when a feeling of loneliness would suddenly be upon me, besetting my mind at all sides, a yearning to hear the voice of another, or to even lay hands on them. The raising and swinging of the axe would soon reduce these feelings down to barely a nub, though I must admit they were never truly gone. It was for this very reason that, when I made my way out my door one beautiful summer morning, I was surprised but not entirely upset to see the man at the riverbank, sitting with his pale naked back to me, the ends of his long black hair resting on his broad shoulders. I waited for a moment before loudly slamming my door behind me in a deliberate attempt to get his attention. Without turning or otherwise moving, he raised his left hand and waved it gently, as if signalling to someone on the opposite bank, before slowly lowering the arm back to his side. I certainly thought this was odd, but being that I had never been skilled in social interaction myself, I thought little of it at the time. I called out, "Who are you and what are you doing here?" to the figure, expecting at least some sort of reply. Instead, he merely repeated the same lazy waving gesture and went back to sitting quietly. Just then, a light breeze blew from the direction of the river, filling my nose with a foul stench as of rotten fish and red meat. I winced and turned my head, blinking and coughing in an effort to dispel the nausea. When my gaze finally returned to the riverbank, the figure was gone. The stench now faded to a remnant. I looked up and down the riverbank, but could find no trace or tracks, only a small divot in the mud where he had been sitting. I wondered to myself, if I had not called out, would he have remained? Would we have eventually struck up a conversation? Perhaps we would not have developed a friendship, but at least a rapport. I cursed myself for being so confrontational. It was at that moment that I realized I could not continue to live the isolated life I had created for myself, though I certainly did not want to abandon it completely. Just knowing that there was another person out there somewhere gave me enough comfort that, for a time afterwards, I was once again free of lament. For the next few days, I continued in my routines, chopping wood, hunting in the woods, checking my newly built traps for rabbit and other small game. Though every one of these mornings, to my mild shame, I opened the door to my cabin with hope in my heart that I would see this man again, sitting there quietly on the banks of the river. Every morning I was left a little more disappointed. I planned out meticulously how I would approach so as not to offend or frighten, obsessing over the details as I lay in bed awake on the seventh night. In my imagination I would leave the safety of the doorway, humming a jaunty tune and slowly wander closer and closer to the shore. Then I would sit down next to him and he would turn to me and smile. He would be handsome, full bearded and strong, with perfect white teeth and bright green eyes. After sitting quietly for a while, I would reach out and put my hand on his, and we would both laugh quietly, mostly to ourselves. It was at this point that I sat bolt upright in my bed and proclaimed to the darkness surrounding me, "Bloody hell, I'm really losing it." The next morning, I took the map I had used when initially exploring the forest, on which I had marked all the places I had eliminated as possible locations for my cabin. I had already been to visit all but one of them, writing it off as a possibility because, if I'm being honest, my exhaustion had gotten the better of me that day and it would have been too far to walk before night fell. It was the most likely spot to find the stranger's dwelling, assuming they lived in the forest and hadn't just been a visitor passing through. I packed my bag with a small number of provisions, a tent I had brought along for emergencies and had not yet used, a small battery-powered torch, and a bottle of very fine Scottish whiskey I had been saving for a reason I had yet to come up with. I will admit that as I opened the door to my cabin that morning, I felt a new sense of purpose rise in me. I glanced hopefully towards the river's edge and, finding no one there yet again, and also being that there were no roads between my cabin and my destination, set off into the woods on foot, heading north as the sun slowly rose. My journey took me the better part of a day, slowed as I was by the terrain becoming progressively steeper and rougher as I made my way further and further north. The fact that the terrain was so rough and difficult to navigate put the thought in my head more than once that perhaps I was on a fool's errand, that no one would choose to live in such hostile country. As the day grew colder and dimmer, so too did my hopes of finding another soul out here. This feeling, however, served only to make it all the sweeter when, just as the sun began to touch the horizon, I crested a small hill and was greeted by the sight of a very well-constructed wooden cabin. A little bigger and taller than my own, it sat next to a bend in the river, only a few feet from the bank. The front door was shut, and no light emanated from within, despite the rapidly approaching night. This initially gave me a little pause, but I approached regardless, excited by the possibility of even a few moments of human companionship. At that moment, I would have been delighted even to have been shooed away by someone. "Ho there!" I shouted excitedly. Though as the words left my lips, I felt immediately foolish for introducing myself with such an archaic pleasantry. After shaking my head at myself, I took a few steps across the small clearing. A light chilly breeze rustled the leaves, and as I took a sharp intake of breath, I saw the door begin to open. My happy surprise was short-lived as the door closed again, bouncing gently off the frame. It had moved only by the wind. I sighed and sagged my shoulders, feeling a little deflated, but still I clung to the hope that the person who lived here was perhaps just out in the woods at the minute. The wind blew again, a little stronger and chillier now. Above me in the sky, dark grey storm clouds had begun to move overhead. I considered setting up my tent and getting a fire started when the banging of the cabin door caught my attention once again. There was bound to be a fireplace inside and a refuge from the wind. Surely this stranger would not mind too much if I was to take shelter until they returned. I approached the cabin and squinted in through the window next to the front door. It was too dark to see much inside save for the vague shape of a table in the middle of the room and a fairly large window in the back wall directly opposite the one I was peering through. Resolving that there was definitely no one inside, I walked around the side of the cabin to where I had spotted, in the dim light, a small wood pile. I was a little disappointed to find that much of the wood there was moulded, rotten, and damp. It was at this point that the thought began to creep into my mind that perhaps this cabin was no longer occupied. I took what few strips of wood I could find that still looked usable, walked back around to the front of the cabin, and slowly pushed open the front door. It was at this point that I became certain the cabin was abandoned. The floor and table were coated with a thin layer of dust. The bed was dirty and unmade, with obvious mildew growing in the once white sheets. Not only that, but as I let the door close behind me, it became obvious from the continued breeze that the window at the back of the house had no glass in it. I turned and with some difficulty closed the stiff latch, securing the door behind me. As I stepped towards the small stone fireplace next to the table, something that, based on its size and speed, I hoped was a mouse, skittered across the floor and disappeared underneath the bed. I hung my head, feeling crushed, and threw the wood onto the metal grate that made up the base of the fireplace. A few minutes later, I had the fire roaring, and, given this new source of light, set about finding some way to block up the empty window through which any heat generated was escaping. As I approached it, I felt glass crunch under my feet. Looking down, I saw that it was all over the floor underneath the window, big shards of it, all covered in the gathering dust. It must have been broken from the outside. As I crouched down to get a closer look, I saw, in the flickering light of the fire, that the floor beneath the dust here at the window was of a darker hue. Wiping away the layer of grime, I saw that not only the floor, but also the wall all around the window was stained with a brownish-red substance that had long since dried. As I looked around the frame, something caught my eye, embedded in the wood. I reached up and, with some small effort, pulled it free. At first I couldn't tell what it was, it being covered in the same rust-like stains as the window frame I had just pulled it from. I held it up to the light and dropped it in disgust when I realized that it was, in fact, a human fingernail. Even today, when I remember the sound it made as it bounced off the wooden floor, it makes my stomach convulse. I spun around and ran to the open window, retching as I leaned out of it. I stared bug-eyed into the running water of the river that flowed by a few feet away as I tried not to think of the terrible object on the floor behind me. I now knew that something had come through this window and pulled someone out. Someone who was bleeding a lot, and they really, really didn't want to go. Something that came out of the river. I backed away from the window as quickly as I could, grabbed my pack and ran out of the door, not bothering to close it behind me, certain the owner of the cabin wouldn't mind. Whatever happened in there had happened a long time ago. I headed east through the darkness, trying to get as much distance between myself and the river as I could, before stopping and pulling my torch and compass from my pack. As I turned and oriented myself in the general direction of my cabin, I felt the first few drops of warm rain. I pushed on through the trees, thinking only of getting as far from this place as I could. In my head, I planned out what I would do when I got there. I would need to fuel up my car if I was going to drive it out of this place. Luckily, I had the foresight to bring a reserve with me on the off chance that I would need it. All I would need to do would be to get the can from my cabin, bring it outside, fuel up the car, and drive out of here. I knew the keys were still in the ignition. Didn't see much point in taking them out when I arrived. I went over and over it again as I ran downhill, ignoring the burning in my lungs and the rain as it gradually got heavier and heavier. Eventually, the pain became so intense that I was forced to slow down to a jog. At one point, I stopped to rest myself against a tree, but the memory of the dried bloodstains on the wall around the window spurred me onwards as I forced myself to carry on, rain driving down on my head, lightning flashing above me. I remember at that point feeling a little disconnected from myself, trying to remember whether you were supposed to take shelter under or stay away from trees during a lightning storm. I recall chuckling to myself between gasps of air as I realized that I was surrounded by trees, so it wouldn't really matter anyway. A few hours later, though I couldn't really say for sure how long, I arrived soaking wet and exhausted at the small clearing by the river where my cabin stood, coming out of the trees behind the building. I approached the house and made my way around the side. When I got to the front, I scanned along the shore with the torch through the rain, looking for any sign of movement. Just then, lightning flashed, illuminating the world all around for an instant. The bank of the river was mercifully clear. I ran along the mud in front of the house, my vision still dazzled from the lightning, and felt a terrible pain in my shin as something took my legs out from under me. I flailed with all my limbs in a panic, trying to kick as hard as I could at whatever had knocked me down. My foot hit something solid as I realized I had merely tripped over the stump I used for chopping wood. It still had my axe lodged in it. With some difficulty, I stood up on my legs that now felt like they were made from nothing but glass and pain, grabbed a hold of the handle of the axe and pulled. After three or four pathetic tugs, I managed to work the axe free from the stump, though it felt to me twice as heavy as it normally did, as I stumbled awkwardly through the hammering rain across the wet mud and pushed open the door of my cabin. I put the axe down on the floor, picked up the box of matches next to the paraffin lamp on my poorly built bedside table and lit it, bathing the room in a dull, flickering yellow light. I stood still for a moment in the light of the lamp, my body screaming at me to lie down. I began to feel foolish then, as if I had perhaps overreacted. There were probably a few explanations for what I had seen in that cabin. I thought for a moment that perhaps I should get out of my wet clothes, have a good night's sleep, and maybe things would look different in the morning. I folded my arms and sighed in disappointment with myself, looking out the window at the pounding rain as it streamed down the glass. I was about to turn away when another series of lightning flashes illuminated the world outside once more. In that brief instant, I saw, framed in the window, an image that has haunted me every day of my life since. Standing in a part of the river I knew to be several feet deep, its ankles somehow just below the surface, was something that I could only describe as a mockery of a man. I had imagined a handsome face with short, dark beard, green eyes, all framed by long black hair. The face of the thing in the river was barely a face at all. There were dents in the head where eyes would normally be, a strange, jagged black line in place of a mouth, and no nose at all to be seen. What I had taken initially for hair was now a mess of wriggling black tubes. The pale skin in the glare of the lightning appeared translucent and exposed a crisscross of what looked like black veins across a naked light grey torso that was featureless except for a pinkish line that ran from the thing's chin all the way down its neck and torso, ending halfway through the groin. Its left arm was raised in the same waving motion I had seen it make before, though now it did so as it moved across the surface of the water towards the riverbank and towards me. Then the world outside was dark once more. All thoughts of rest now gone from my mind, I once again picked up the axe and readied myself, not taking my eyes off the window as the rain continued to run down it in a torrent, the sound of water hitting the roof filling the air with a hissing like radio static, behind which the thunder rumbled low and menacing. To my surprise, there came a pounding knock on the door. I adjusted my grip on the axe and turned towards the door, waiting for whatever it was to come through it. The pounding came again, louder this time. I raised the axe up and adjusted my grip to hold it tighter, not taking my eyes off the door. Until, of course, the window exploded in a shower of glass as the thing came crashing through it, one leg flopping around limply, its foot scraping against one wall, while the other, well, wasn't a foot at all. Its right leg didn't really end, but rather at the ankle stretched off into a flexible, fleshy limb that snaked out the window, the other end of which, if indeed there was an end, disappeared somewhere in the darkness. Taken by surprise, I flailed wildly with the axe as I fell to the side, thankfully away from the thing, as the strange limb held it aloft, like a puppet on the end of a stick. The pink line from its chin to its groin began to split and widen as it turned towards me, pale green mucus flowing out of the giant gash and splashing on the floor as the edges sprang open to reveal countless rows of thin, sharp, yellow teeth, all set in a giant crimson sheet of flesh that was once the thing's torso. The poor imitation of a head flopped from side to side atop the whole mess, giving it an appearance that would perhaps have been comical if it hadn't otherwise been so utterly horrifying. A newfound burst of adrenaline rushed into my muscles, giving me the strength to roll backwards, axe still in hand, just as the flat red sheet of teeth came down hard on the floor where I had been lying a split second before. With all my strength, I pulled myself up, with one knee and one foot on the floor, genuflecting as one might do during a wedding proposal, and flung myself forward, axe in hand, ready to bury it in the thing's flattened out back. Just as I was coming down from my admittedly shallow leap, the thing raised up beneath me, slapping me out of the air and sidelong into the wall by the window. Being that my arms were above my head, brandishing the axe, this meant that my ribs took the full force of the blow. I felt a crack and heard a pop as I fell down to the floor, still clinging desperately to the axe as I fell face first onto the boards, breaking my nose with another unpleasant crack. Ignoring the pain in my side and the pain in my head, I pushed myself up on my knees and swung at the nearest moving target, which happened to be the fleshy limb draped across the cracked window frame. I swung the axe down with all my might, feeling my smashed, splintered rib pop through my skin as I did so. The blade of the axe fell directly on the limb, gliding through it effortlessly and splitting the boards in the wall below as I buried the head deep in the wood. The thing, now no longer supported by the limb, fell to the floor with a terrible wet thud as blood, thick and red, gushed from the severed stump. The other end of the limb retracted out of the window with whip-crack speed, and above the sound of hammering rain, there came the sound of a screeching wail from somewhere in the near distance. The thing spread out and contracted on the floor, blood still gushing from the hole at the base of its leg as it tensed up one final time, and then spread out and stopped moving altogether. I grabbed the handle of the axe and pulled myself up. the axe buried so deeply and firmly in the wood that it easily held my weight. I looked down at the red stain that was slowly getting bigger on my white shirt and coughed to the accompaniment of sharp, extreme pain. The lightning flashed outside once more in another quick succession. I could not see much movement outside, save for a brief glimpse of some large grey mass that was just disappearing beneath the raging surface of the river. I turned to the thing on the floor that seemed now to be completely immobile, as if it had just been some abominable limb from something much, much worse. Thinking rationally, I should have just refueled my car, driven away, and informed the proper authorities, but I was so very far from rational at this point. I staggered across the cabin, picked up the canister of fuel I had been saving, and being at least somewhat sensible, took it outside and put about half of it into the fuel tank of my car. The other half I used to coat the thing and the rest of the cabin. I took the paraffin lamp with me as I left and threw it inside, igniting the whole interior of the cabin almost instantly. I stood there watching it burn as the sun came up. No one believed me, of course. They just thought I was some crazy lady who went to live out in the woods, couldn't handle it, and almost got herself killed through incompetence. I don't really care what they think. Recently, I read in a book about the anglerfish. It has a limb that hangs in front of its face and glows, drawing in its prey with a fascinating, beautiful light, lulling them into a state of comfort and fascination right before it tears them to pieces. Anyway, that's why I don't go into the woods anymore.